Hello, Husker fans. Welcome to episode 255 of the Husker Football Fan Podcast. I'm Mike Harvett.
And I'm Justin Swanson.
In today's episode, we preview this weekend's game against Wisconsin and finally address the restructuring of Scott Frost's contract and the coaching shakeup of the past week.
You can find us on the web at huskerpod.com or by searching Husker Football Fan Podcast on Facebook. You can also connect with us on Twitter by following at huskerpod or email us at huskerpod@gmail.com. This episode is brought to you by Central Nebraska Buffalo. Check out their website for their latest deals at cnbuffalo.com.
This episode is also brought to you by Monty Rohde with Pinnacle Realty in Lincoln. Looking to buy or sell a home in Lincoln or know somebody who is, reach out to Monty at 402-770-3356. So, Justin, I think the most pressing issue that we need to address this week is, why was Kenny Bell wearing Iowa gear?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what they gave you for it, Kenny, but it wasn't worth it.
Here's the thing. He kind of like implied, oh, you all needed to know the context of this. You need to watch the whole video to under... I watched the whole video. I still don't get why Kenny Bell was wearing Iowa gear.
Was it a Big Ten Network thing?
I think he's kind of, yeah. I think he's doing some freelance stuff. I don't know if he's like employed by the Big Ten Network or what, but... I guess they paid him to put on that shirt.
Hey, you know, money talks.
And Kenny walks.
Oh, in yellow.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I don't really care, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We all do what we choose.
You know what? Everybody's got to pay rent. Everybody's got to pay for their mortgage or whatever. Everybody's got to put food on the table, so.
Yep.
And speaking of putting food on the table... I want to recommend Central Nebraska Buffalo to you. And, you know, if you're tired of paying the rent and want to become a homeowner, Monty Rohde with Pinnacle Realty in Lincoln.
Oh, wow.
Look what I just did there, Justin.
You are so smooth.
Yeah.
You are so smooth how you worked that in. I think, yeah, so the elephant in the room, Frost, man, restructured the contract, got rid of four of his offensive staff, all, I think, friends, you know, I think buddies. Yeah. And he'll live to see another day. We've got quality control specialists and whatnot coaching positions for the last two games. And, you know, we're not gonna go to a bowl, so it only is the two games, and then who knows what. How you feeling, Mike? How's all that make you feel?
You know, I think I'm on board with everything.
Okay.
I think, you know, we're at a point where a bowl game is not in the picture anymore. So kind of making those moves now does make some sense. It's kind of like, hey, there's no way to salvage this season in terms of long-term goals. So why not get the ball rolling on interviewing who the next guy is right away? I, you know, my heart was in my throat when I heard, because I did not see the news. I heard the news on the radio while I was in a Scooter's drive-through on Monday.
Of all places.
And so I actually stopped back. There was nobody behind me, so I just stopped back far enough from the speaker that they didn't know I was coming. And I just sat there and I listened because they like broke in and had somebody... basically read the statement.
This from, just in.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh no, what is happening? And then once they kind of explained it, I was like, okay, that works for me. That works for me. I like the idea that both Frost and the university have some skin in the game next year. Frost has to meet whatever metrics they have decided upon. And
the mystery metrics.
I'm sure that probably means they've got to have like a winning record by game six or something like that. But,
something.
I think keeping Scott Frost is the right decision. I think we've been pretty, consistent about voicing that opinion here on the podcast this year. Just, we knew that this season was going to be incredibly tough for the Huskers. And, you know, the record's not at all what we had hoped for, but it's ultimately not surprising that this team was losing to top 10 teams, you know?
Yeah. The surprising thing was the losing to the bottom 10 teams.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
That's the surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the games where we were supposed to win that we lost, that's embarrassing. But then the games that we lost to the good teams, we're kind of like, eh, maybe we're not so bad. It's this weird, confusing conundrum.
Well, what they've said over and over and over is we're close. And my biggest concern is if you really do think you're that close and you dump four of your guys, I feel like the odds of getting back to close just drops.
Mm.
You know, obviously there was some sort of change need to be had. And I don't, yeah. It just feels real drastic. I think whether it was now or at the end of the season is probably that, or I think we've agreed some change needed to be made, but it also feels like a last gasp of desperation at some level too.
Hmm.
Do you feel like that feels desperate?
No. I feel like next season, regardless of whether he fired those coaches or not, was going to be a kind of a make it or break it moment for Scott Frost. So
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
So next, yeah, it, you know, with the way our offense has performed this year, I think it makes sense to kind of clean house, you know, that the reason we lost games this year was not because of the defense. So I think making those changes may have been an ultimatum from the athletic director. We won't know. But, yeah.
It feels like really what it came down to was some sort of motivational thing with the players, because the offense performed, it performed adequately in some of the big games. But, yeah, it never, you know, they never performed in the clutch. Never. Ever. They never performed in the clutch. And for, you know, for 4 years. And they could make big plays, but they couldn't get it in. And the red zone was just consistently a problem. And I feel like as frustrating as it was to lose the close ones, it was the way that the close ones to the top flight teams, it was the close losses to the second tier teams that really hurt. And I feel like where Ohio State just was insistent on chucking the ball, those Purdue and Minnesota kind of had our number in terms of knowing we're going to just play real conservative. We're going to run the ball even when it doesn't really work. We're going to throw short passes, and Nebraska's going to screw up and we're going to win just by sticking to that. And yeah, those games, I feel like Illinois too, but that was, you know, game zero. So I don't know if you want to give that one a pass or not. I don't really want to, but, those losses, we had some, one of our listeners who's a Minnesota fan, I'm sure you're listening now too, kind of tried to call me out on saying we shouldn't be losing to lower tier teams. He was trying to say, Minnesota, Purdue, they're not lower tier. They've been doing better than you guys. So it's like, yeah, you know what I mean? I'm talking to Nebraska fans. I think Nebraska fans know what I'm talking about. And if that's a little arrogance on our part, an institutional arrogance of 50 years, so be it. I can live with that.
Yeah, I'll own it.
Yeah. So it's who we are. And yeah, you can't be losing to the lower tier teams. So I'm trying to talk myself into feeling good about this right now, because there are changes that needed to be made. So I just don't know how firing most of your offensive staff will quickly translate into success next year.
That's a good point. Especially when you might have some key players leaving.
Yeah. I mean, so JoJo's already out. You know, maybe he already would have been, whether or not that offensive staff was fired because he broke his hand. But I don't, it remains to be seen who quits. I don't think, do you think we might've heard if anybody else was quitting before the Wisconsin game by now? I think people really want to beat Iowa and Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that what we've seen from this team this year, I think that they are just as motivated as ever to beat these two teams at the end of the year. Now psychologically, what's that going to turn into? I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see on the field this Saturday. It'll be a very interesting weekend. I don't know if we should, I guess, yeah, I don't see other players leaving. just because at this point.
So yeah, so on changing the offensive coordinator and the people under him, I've got two thoughts, and I'm afraid I'm going to lose track of them. So one is the idea of those guys taking the fall for Frost. So that's, make sure I come back to that. The other is just thinking back through the recent history of coaches making a change towards the end or not. So you go back to Solich, and he pretty much overhauled his staff. You know, I think in retrospect, we all know he tried to be really loyal and keep on a bunch of Osborne guys who were really kind of tired and ready to move on and retire. And so he overhauled his staff and had a successful season after going 7-7. He went 9-3. And then, you know, Steve Peterson ultimately made the move, and Nebraska has not yet recovered fully. And then you look, so that worked, but Peterson didn't give it time to really grow and develop. So we don't know how well it would have worked. And then you think about Callahan. I think everybody recognizes that his defensive coordinator, Cosgrove, was a liability, and he was an offensive genius. And if he wasn't so loyal to his buddy and fires him, maybe he's still the head coach at Nebraska if he could have hired a defensive coordinator that worked. I can't think of a parallel for Bo, but then you cut to Riley, who we were making maybe progress. I think statistically we're making progress with Banker. We did in year two. But I course, you know, like Steve Peterson, kind of a meddling athletic director, says, no, you're gonna fire Banker and you're gonna hire Diaco. From what I've heard at this point, it sounds like that was Eichhorst's idea, and it did not work. so now here we are with, it sounds like, is it clear to you whether or not it was Trev's idea to fire those particular guys, or if that was Frost's idea? Do you have a sense of that?
I mean, I don't know. As a fan, I feel like a lot of people are just assuming that it was Trev's idea. Do we call him Trev, or do we call him Alberts? That's something I was wondering about the other day.
I call him Trev, but that's just because when I was a kid, he was a player, and that's just what we've always called him.
Sure, right, yeah.
So, I mean, you look at the different, you look at the positions, and I mean, I think everybody loves Ryan Held. He's a Nebraskan through and through.
Yeah.
He's been grinding it on the recruiting trail for years. But that running back position, they bring in these guys. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Divine Ozigbo, in his first year, Ryan's first year, he exploded. I assume that was Ryan Held's doing. Or maybe he was under tapped by Riley Stapp. I'm not sure, but he exploded. But since then, there's been this by-committee approach. You haven't had a dominant running back. I mean, Ramirez have had a decent season. Yant is promising, but they just can't commit to a running back. And I don't know if that's Held or if it's Frost. I suspect it's as much Frost as it is Held. But anyway, I mean, just with the production at the running back position, you can appreciate why he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so you keep Becton. Tight ends have clearly been a strength. There's been a lot of people calling for Austin to be fired all season. You do look at Cam Jurgens, a guy who they converted from tight end to center, and I think that's worked.
Yeah, you know,
he's a pretty good center. And then they've had some misses, I think, and they've been forced into a young offensive line that they just haven't developed well enough. So Sam McEwen likes to say that the offensive linemen are being asked to do too much. Like you look at an RPO, is it a run? Is it a pass? I don't know. So, I mean, that's kind of his take. I don't know, offensive line expert, but there's definitely been a weakness. That's been the offensive line outside of Cam Jurgens. So you can understand that. And who's the fourth person?
Verduzco,
yeah. My line for the last couple weeks, and I've probably said on the show too, is we just hit Adrian's ceiling real quick.
Yeah.
And we've just never pushed past it. If that's a Verduzco thing, maybe. It would have been interesting to see some others next year.
That's just a frustrating thing for me, though, is like, if he is this quarterback whisperer that he was touted to be, like, why don't we have, like, just all of these amazing quarterbacks by now? You know, like, it's been Martinez or no one, essentially. Like, you'd like to think that Smothers would get some playing time this year and that he would be productive. We haven't seen that at all. I hope he gets to play these next couple of games. For real. Give him some playing time.
You wonder, what are the odds of him ever getting playing time at Nebraska now? I mean, you bring in a new, you bring in a new offensive coordinator, and this is going to be an offense that Scott is going to be hands-off on in theory. He's going to have to trust this person a lot, but this, this new person's going to have their offense and probably a hire or two or three that they want to bring in, and they're going to have a type of quarterback. And so the odds of it fitting Logan, I don't know, seem kind of slim to me.
Yeah, who knows?
That makes me sad. Too emotional with all this stuff. So at the end of the day, you've got four guys who are probably underperforming well in Lubick. I feel like the offense is maybe a little bit more... Oh, no, it was definitely more. I mean, we've seen statistics. It was more big plays, more intermediate plays. It was, I'm not sure about points, but the production on the ground, more yards, it was statistically better in that way. But we couldn't score. We couldn't score in the clutch, couldn't score in the red zone. And so so he's gone. So what do you think about the thought that Frost is throwing them under the bus? What do you make of that? Because I feel like that I've heard a lot of disgust, like, oh, he quit on his guys.
I don't think that at all. I think especially with the manner in which he has spoken about them, in the midst of letting them go, I think if anything, this has been kind of the most amicable parting of ways that we've ever seen, at least in the modern era, for Nebraska. Football coaches leaving, you know? I don't think that these coaches are leaving in disgrace. I think that it's just one of those things where they probably got together in a room and he said, hey, boys, I got to make a hard decision here. And again, like I was saying, I think that if that was an ultimatum presented to Frost, that kind of gets him off the hook for it being any type of, I'm throwing these guys under the bus.
Well, yeah, I mean, so at the end of the day, it's his offense. It's his team. He's going to move into a more CEO type position, but I mean, he is effectively the CEO of the football team. So if something's not working, it's his responsibility at the end of the day to make it work. And I guess he could have just, they could have all quit, but then everybody loses their job. We're talking about loyalty to assistant coaches. So at least he keeps most of them. I don't know. I feel like people like getting angry about him for that. I don't quite connect with that. You think you should hire a special teams coach, Mike?
No, I don't think that's really necessary.
Dawson's still in the fold.
I'm kidding. I think it would be wise. I've been hammering on that all season long. I think it's got to happen, man.
More and more I'm coming around to that position with you, Mike. It's just Dawson is doing a good job organizing, but you need someone who can focus on the specialists, and I don't know what there was that you could do with the kickers this year if they just needed to sit down with the sports psychologists, and I bet you they were if that's what it takes or what, but to figure this out, but you gotta do something. And as much grief as Bruce Reed got, I'd be curious, has anybody compared Bruce Reed's statistics? If you are a Nebraska journalist who listens to this, can you please compare Bruce Reed's statistics over his 3 years to the last 4 years? I bet they'd be favorable. Although did Caleb Lightbourne kick it backwards on a kickoff?
Yes.
Under Frost?
I don't know if it wasn't a kickoff, it was a punt. Not under Frost. It was not under Frost, though.
No, there was a kickoff that he kicked backwards.
No way. That actually happened?
I think it was an onside kick.
Nah, must have been year one.
What a deal. So, I don't know. I'm bummed, man. I mean, it feels like something needed to happen. And I guess from a recruiting perspective, you want to get out in front of recruits. You don't want to sign a bunch of guys that these guys recruited and then fire them all the next day. That feels a little skeevy, a little dishonest. So, there's clarity there, but I really want to beat Wisconsin and Iowa too, so that's maybe short-sighted of me. I felt like we matched up. I feel like we match up really well with these teams, especially Iowa. But I feel like the odds of pulling together a coherent team, we're going to see the proof in the pudding of senior leadership here. That's for sure. They've talked a lot about player leadership, and we're going to see what they got.
It's interesting. I am not as, I don't know. I just don't have the sense that the sky is falling. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily what you're saying, but I think that were Scott Frost to come back for another season this next year, there would have to be something like this. I don't think that he earned the, I don't think that he earned the ability to make any demands, you know? And so if Trev Alberts asked him to do certain things or, you know, told him you have to make certain changes or, you know, and obviously this is conjecture, but I just feel like he is in a position where he's probably doing what he has to do in order to coach next year. And I'm comfortable with that. If this is what has to happen, okay. And if not, he probably needed to make a better case for why these guys needed to stay. But, yeah, I'm just happy that we're retaining Frost for another year to hopefully put this stuff together. And if not, you know, I think next year is where the rubber meets the road, finally. It's either happening or not next year.
Yeah, no, you're right. Good perspective. It's change had to be made at some level. I think you're right. We'll see what happens, man. It does feel like a big, bold move, and there's no guarantee that it plays out positively. I think that's that's at least if you move forward with all the same people, you know what you've got, and you can do self-study and dig into your tendencies and bring in someone to help you make changes. Anyway, you kind of know what's coming and you are hoping for growth. This just feels like a real high risk, high reward. Frost is betting on himself. He could have quit, he could have been fired.
Right.
And taken a lot of money, but he feels confident and Trev seems to feel confident or at least optimistic about making this work. And if it doesn't, Trev's going to hire somebody else. Any more to say on that, or should we move ahead and look at Wisconsin?
All I have to say is, man, this podcast, whenever we hang it up, we have chronicled such an interesting time in Husker football history. I feel like we are in real time capturing a time capsule for people to be talking about the state of Husker football 100 years from now. You know, like some kid through his, I don't know, spinal uplink is going to be able to go in and read the transcripts, download the transcripts of our podcast for his history report for, you know, some small town Nebraska school. I don't know. Anyway,
you can use.
You have to use your hands. This is a baby's toy.
Wisconsin 7-3.
Nice segue there, Justin. Good transition.
Hard, you know?
Just like this season.
Hard and fast. Just like this season. Wisconsin is 7-3. They started off slow. They started off 1-3 and have won every game since. It's kind of interesting. You look, they lost to teams that are currently ranked in the top 15, and their best win is over Iowa, who's currently 23, SP Plus, of course. So, you know, they don't have that. I mean, that's a good win, but outside of that, not a lot of good wins. Let me just walk through the schedule here.
Sure.
They start off, I can't even remember these games anymore. This season has just aged me. I had a friend text me last night saying, hey, are you listening or watching the Team USA versus Mexico game, which, you know, I might have been excited about in another time. I was like, man, I don't have any energy for sports, like any of it. It all seems pointless. It tastes like ash or wormwood. And he said, well, the crazy thing is it's only 20 minutes into the game, the soccer game, but Nebraska's already missed 2 field goals.
Boo.
Yeah. I LOL'd. So anyway, I don't remember these games. They seem like ancient history. Wisconsin started the season off losing to Penn State 16-10. Then they beat Eastern Michigan. Oh, Penn State's currently 15th in SP Plus. They beat Eastern Michigan, who's currently 101, 34-7. Then they lost to Notre Dame, who's currently number 10, 41-13. And then they lost to number 5, Michigan, 38-17. Those were all at home, too. Ouch. That's a rough go of it. Then they got in a win streak. The best team they played is, Iowa. So 84, Illinois, they beat 24-0. They beat 67, Army, 20-14. They went to Purdue, who's 51st, and won 30-13. They hosted Iowa, who's 23rd, and won 27-7. They went to Rutgers, who's 74th, and they won 52-3. And then I guess I didn't write down what Northwestern is, but they won 35-7 this last week. Wisconsin overall, they are the fourth team in SP+. Offensively, 49th, so nothing special, but not terrible. Defensively, number two. They were number one. They're now number two. And special teams are 24, so they are just a lot more sound than us. Their quarterback this season has been Graham Mertz, who I know has struggled in those losses, but has been a steady force ever since then. He's 125 on 213 passing attempts for 1,505 yards. It's a 58.7% completion rate, averaging 7.1 yards per catch, thrown 8 touchdowns and 9 interceptions, has been sacked 10 times. Braylon Allen is their lead running back with 118 attempts for 834 yards. That's a 7.1 yard average and 9 touchdowns. Chez Malusi? Holy smokes, I don't know that name at all. Am I saying that right? Or is it Shay? No, like clue, like in French? Like yeah. I'm not sure. I'm going to say Shay. I studied
German. I would butcher that name if I tried to say it.
He's actually carried the ball more times, 173 yards. Carries rather for 815 yards is a 4.7 yard average and 5 touchdowns. Graham Mertz has negative 15 yards rushing. Danny Davis is their lead receiver with 27 receptions for 418 yards. That's 15.5 yards per catch. 2 touchdowns. Kendrick Pryor is second with 24 catches for 328 yards. That's 13.7 yards per catch with 2 touchdowns. And then Jake Ferguson is the tight end, actually has the most receptions of all of these people with 31 for 298 yards. That's 9.6 yards per catch and a couple of touchdowns for him as well. Colin Larsh is their kicker. He has missed one PAT. He's 31 of 32. And he has made 13 of 16 field goals, which is about what Connor Culp was last year. So it's 81%. He missed one inside the 20s. And he missed one in the 30s, and he missed one over 50. His long is 43 on the year. Their lead tackler is Leo Chenal with 62 total tackles. He also looks to be one of their leaders in sacks with 6.5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles. Their sack leader is linebacker Nick Herbig with 7 sacks, and they've got Caesar Williams, a cornerback, has 3 interceptions and 4 passes defended. Fayon Hicks, the other cornerback, has 8 passes defended. So that's a couple of corners that they're going to be tough to pass on. So it's a dominant defense,
yeah.
And just kind of a, you know, better than average offense, but not knock your socks off.
So I recommend not looking up the ESPN FPI prediction for this game. It's not promising. And let's be honest, in the wake of this past week, I know we're coming off a bye week, but holy smokes, I don't think you can predict anything for this week. I don't know, man.
Are you saying we shouldn't do score predictions?
I think we should. I think we absolutely have to, but I have a feeling it's one of those situations where it's like, flip a coin.
Do you want to hear our SP Plus numbers?
Sure.
Well, by comparison, we are 25th overall. We dropped one spot during the bye week. We offensively are 36th. We dropped 6 spots there during the bye week. So 13 spots better than Wisconsin. Defensively, we're actually 17th. We moved up 3 spots to 17 during the bye week. And special teams, we moved up 1 spot to 126. So, real salty defense. offense that I feel like if we'd looked at that number midway through the season, it was going to be a lot lower, has moved up a bit. And, you know, special teams, that just, they're just pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's a tough game. I'm guessing it's a pretty low scoring game. And it's, frankly, I think it comes down to Adrian not making mistakes.
Yeah.
I think we can win. I like how we match up against Iowa even better, but I feel like if the defense can just play lights out like they have against the top teams and shut this offense down and get some timely interceptions, timely fumbles, if the defense can score, I think we win. I'm saying that. Defense scores, I think we win.
I'll take it. That was something I was waiting for last week. I was just hoping that somehow, you know, you're desperate. And, you know, maybe it's time to fire some of your offensive coaching staff when, during a game, fans are hoping and praying that maybe our defense get a pick six or a scoop and score or something.
Please.
Because that thought did cross my mind towards the end of the Ohio State game.
So, Mike, do you have a score prediction spelled out?
I do.
All right. I've got one, too. Do you want to hit me with yours?
Sure. I'm playing just the numbers here. I'm looking at the over-under and the fact that we, for some reason, have to play everybody close. I'm going 21-20 Nebraska.
Woof. I feel like if we win 21-20, it's because we score three touchdowns in the first quarter and they don't, and then they kind of rally in the third and fourth and it comes down to like a missed field goal. Like we just hang on would be my guess.
I'm going to say we score on the first drive and then not again until the last 5 minutes in which we score twice to win.
Okay. I have 17-14.
Okay.
Yeah. Low scoring game. And, Adrian plays inspired offense in honor of Verduzco. Ramir and Yant both go off. The offensive line pulls all together, and we all say, huh, I guess all we need to do is fire half our coaching staff.
Works for me, man. Works for
all
me.
All right.
I like that how both you and I are predicting a much lower score for both teams than we have for most of the season. I think we've given up on Nebraska getting into the 30s.
Oh, well, especially against this defense. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Every point is at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Cool.
Yeah. Well, you already slipped in a real cool plug.
Oh, hey, there is one thing that we need to bring up. On our last episode, we did kind of float it out there that if anybody wanted to give us recommendations for a show to watch on their favorite streaming service, they could do so. And so I would like to congratulate Mr. Jeremy Talcott, one of our friends on Twitter. He sent us a recommendation for the Hulu show Peep Show, which I needed to clarify with him before I was willing to Google anything related to a show by that name. But here's kind of the quick summary here. Peep Show follows the lives of Mark Corrigan and Jeremy Usborne, two very different dysfunctional best friends who share a flat in Croydon, South London. Mark is a socially awkward and despondent loan manager, while Jeremy is a childish slacker and an unemployed musician who lives in Mark's spare room. Stylistically, the show uses point-of-view shots, giving the program its title, with the thoughts of main characters Mark and Jeremy audible as voiceovers. Though it never achieved high viewing figures during its original run, the show received consistent critical acclaim and has since become a cult classic, and it is available on Hulu. So it's a British television sitcom that apparently is enjoying a renaissance on streaming services. Huh. So,
I'm curious.
Yeah,
I'm just on IMDb flicking through the pictures here, and yeah, I'm curious to check this out.
Yeah, I think I've got 2 weeks of Hulu left before my $2.99 a month deal expires. So maybe I'll check it out here over the next couple weeks. Watch some over Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, because what else is there to do on the fourth Thursday in November?
I don't know. Not celebrating nothing. Your birthday this year.
No, not this year. All right, Mike. Well, it's been good talking to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think the overall tone of this week's episode kind of summarizes how you and I are feeling about this season at this point. I do want to, again, express just thankfulness for people with sticking with us. I know that if you're listening to our podcast at this point in the season, you are a diehard Husker fan. And so we're right there with you. Hopefully we are kind of the voice of the people as best as we can be. As the Husker Football Fan Podcast.
Yeah. And hey, Texas lost.
Indeed they did. Love that SEC chant at the end of the game. I saw a ridiculous stat. It said, like, in the last five seasons, Kansas is 2-3 against Texas. And 2-40 plus, I don't know what it was, against the rest of the Big 12. So, interesting.
All right, I think I'm done podcasting. Shall we reconvene next Sunday?
Yep, let's do it, man. We're going to finish this season strong, just like the Huskers.
All right, go Big Red.
Go Big Red. The Husker Football Fan Podcast is an unofficial, non-commercial podcast and is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. The views expressed on this podcast belong solely to the individuals expressing them. The Husker Football Fan Podcast is not endorsed by or affiliated with the Nebraska Cornhuskers or the University of Nebraska.